We did, Juliet returned. It was useless. Breakspear has powerful friends. He made sure the message went right to a man called Horace Dearborn. Do you know him?
Alex's eyes narrowed. I know him.
The after effects of too many wars and the constant pressure of the Cold Peace provided opportunities for a certain kind of person. Horace Dearborn was one of the type who flourished on unrest and fear. After the Institute was destroyed by the Indokind, said Juliet, Clive Breakspear arrived here with that man Dearborn's name behind him, like a vulture glutting himself on their remains. The word is, his shadow hunters take missions for money. Like, if someone wanted a rival dead, Breakspear's shadow hunters would see it done. They don't hunt demons. They don't hunt downworlders who break the law. They hunt us all.
Alex's stomach turned. They're mercenaries.
The decent shadow hunters left when they couldn't make any difference to the way things were done, said Juliet. I don't think they talked. I think they were ashamed. This market, with all the kids in it, the market wasn't safe. It seemed like the leaders were being picked off, so people would be more vulnerable. They didn't try for me. I've got friends in Paris and in Brussels who would raise a howl if I disappeared. So I ordered wards and fences put up. I let people call me a queen. I tried to seem as strong as I could, so they wouldn't come at us. But things are getting worse, not better.
Female werewolves are disappearing.
Killed? Asked Alec. I don't know, said Juliet. We thought they were running at first, but there are too many. Mothers who wouldn't have left their families. Girls as young as my Rosie. Some people say they've seen a strange warlock about. I have no idea what's happening to those women, but I knew I couldn't trust anyone at the Institute to find out. I won't risk trusting any shadow hunter. Except you. I put out the word I wanted you. I wasn't sure you would come, but here you are.
She lifted her face imploringly to Alex. The queen of the shadow market looked, in that moment, as young as the kids clustered around her.
Will you help me? One more time.
As many times as you need me, said Alec. I'll find those women. I'll find out who's doing this. I'll stop them.
You have my word.
He hesitated, remembering Jem and Tessa's mission. I have friends here besides Lily. A warlock woman and a man who used to be a silent brother, with a silver streak in his hair. Can they enter the market? I swear to you they can be trusted.
I think I know who you mean, Juliet said. They were asking for admittance a few nights back, weren't they? I heard the man was handsome.
Boy, did you hear right, said Lily.
Juliet's smile spread.
There really are some very handsome Nephilim around.
I guess, said Alec. I don't really think about Jem that way.
How can you be good at archery when you are so blind? Lily demanded.
Alec rolled his eyes.
Thanks, Juliet. I'll let you know as soon as I find something out.
Juliet said softly.
I'm glad you're here.
I won't leave until I've helped you, said Alec, then glanced at the kids who were still staring.
Bye, kids. It was very nice to meet you.
He nodded to them awkwardly, then made his way back toward the lights and music of the market.
Okay, he told Lily as they walked. Let's take a quick look around the market, ask some questions before we meet Jem and Tessa.
Let's drop by the fairy fruit gin stall, Lily suggested.
Alec said, no.
We can't be all business all the time, said Lily,
who was seldom all business for 5 minutes.
So who do you think is hot?
When Alec stared at her, she said,
we're on a bro road trip. We're meant to share secrets.
You said not Jem, so who?
Alec shook his head at a fairy trying to sell them charmed bracelets, even though she insisted they were real charms and really charming.
When Alec asked about the disappearances, the fairy's eyes widened, but she didn't know any more than Juliet. Magnus is hot, Alex said finally as they went on their way. Lily rolled her eyes.
Wow, you and monogamous Bane make me tired. He's even dumber than you are.
He's not dumb.
An immortal who sets his soft heart on one person?
Lily bit her lip, fangs pressing down too hard.
That's dumb.
Lily, said Alec, but Lily was shaking her head and proceeding, her voice firmly light.
Leaving aside your destined honey lamb and all, I know there was Jace.
Is it just guys with golden eyes? Asked Lily.
That is a very particular taste you have there, friend. It really narrows the playing field. So, no other crushes besides Jace? Even a teeny tiny one when you were young?
Why are you leering like you know something I don't? Alec asked wearily. Lily giggled. There was a lot of noise happening behind one of the stalls. Alec turned his head toward it automatically, but also because he didn't know how to explain that specific crushes hadn't been the problem. It had been a relief, in a way, to pretend even to himself that a crush on Jace was the thing that was making him miserable. Even when he was a kid, he'd found his attention caught by posters of mundane men in the streets of New York, or found himself drawn to guys visiting the Institute, listening from behind his vase to their stories of demon hunting and thinking they were cool. He'd had unfocused childish daydreams, created hazy bright dreamlands featuring boys, and then he'd lost the dream with his childhood. He'd been too young to understand himself, and then he hadn't been. He heard the way Shadowhunter visitors sneered, how his dad hinted at the subject as if it was too awful even to be said outright, when saying things outright was the only way Alec knew how to say them. Alec felt guilty every time he had to pull his eyes off another boy, even just a curious look. And then there had been Magnus, and he hadn't been able to look away from him at all. The noise from behind the stalls was growing closer. A lot of noise, very close to the ground. The orphans of the Buenos Aires Shadow Market exploded behind a stall where a werewolf was selling stew. There were kids everywhere, downworlders of every kind, and all of them seemed to be trying to get his attention, shouting out names, requests, jokes. The main language was Spanish, but Alec heard a few others and was immediately confused about which words belonged to which language. Multicolored lights swung on dozens of faces. He turned his head, overwhelmed, not able to make out any face or voice in the chaos. Hey, he said, stooping over the kids and pulling food out of his duffel bag. Hey, is anybody hungry? Take these.
Gross! Are those energy bars?
Lily demanded.
Way to pile misery on orphans.
Alec took out his wallet and began to give the kids money. Magnus was always magically making cash appear there in case of emergencies. Alec wouldn't spend it on himself. Lily was laughing. She liked kids, though sometimes she pretended she didn't. Then she froze. For a moment, her bright black eyes went flat and dead. Alec stood up straight.
You, kid. Lily's voice was trembling. What did you say your name was?
She shook her head and repeated the question in Spanish. Alec followed her line of sight to one particular child in the crowd. The other children were jostling each other, pressed up against each other in the stalls, but there was a small circle of space around this boy. Now he held their attention. He wasn't shouting. His curly head was tipped back so he could study them, and he was doing so with narrowed, very dark eyes. His extremely critical air had to be Alec's imagination. The kid looked about 6 years old. The boy answered Lily, his voice calm.
Raphael?
Raphael, Lily whispered.
Right.
Raphael's face was one of the youngest in that crowd of heartbreakingly young faces, but there was a chilling air of self-possession about him. He advanced, and Alec wasn't surprised to see the other kids move out of his path. He carried distance with him. Alec's own eyes narrowed. He couldn't tell what kind of downworlder this kid was, but there was something about the way he moved. Raphael said something else in Spanish. From the imperious tilt at the end of the sentence, it was a question or a demand. Alec looked helplessly at Lily. She nodded, visibly gathering her composure.
The kid said, She cleared her throat.
He says, "Are you a shadow hunter? Not like the ones at the Institute. Are you a real shadow hunter?"
Alec blinked. Raphael's eyes were fixed on his face. Alec knelt on the ground amid the bright riot of the shadow market, so he could look into those dark, intent eyes.
"Yes," said Alec. "I'm a shadow hunter. Tell me how I can help you."
Lily translated. Raphael shook his curly head, expression even cooler, as if Alec had failed some sort of test. He snapped out several more lines of Spanish.
"He says he doesn't want help," said Lily. "He says he overheard you asking around the market about the women who vanished."
"So the kid can understand some English?" asked Alec, hopeful. Raphael rolled his eyes and said something else in Spanish. Lily grinned.
"He says no, not at all. He has information, but he doesn't want to talk here."
Alec frowned.
"Boludo," he repeated. "He said that. What does that word mean?"
Lily grinned.
"It means he thinks you're a nice man."
It hadn't sounded nice. Alec squinted at Raphael. Raphael gave him a blank stare back.
"All right," Alec said slowly. "Who's taking care of you? Let's go to them and we can talk together."
The night was dark, especially under the awning of a stall, but Alec was pretty sure Raphael rolled his eyes. He transferred his attention from Alec, whom he clearly found to be hopeless, and looked to Lily.
"He says that he takes care of himself," said Lily.
"But he's 6, said Alec.
"He says he's 5,
Lily said, her brows knit as she listened and translated slowly.
"His parents died in the Dark War, when the Institute fell, and then there was a werewolf woman who looked after a bunch of kids, but she's gone now. He says nobody else wants him."
She must be one of the women who had disappeared, Alec thought grimly. That thought was lost in the rush of horror when he realized what Lily was saying.
"His parents died when the Institute fell?"
Alec repeated.
Every cell in his body sparked with shock.
"Is this boy a shadow hunter?"
"Would it be worse to find a shadow hunter child like this?" Lily asked, her voice cold.
"Yes," Alec snarled back. "Not because downworlder kids deserve this. My kid's a downworlder. No kid deserves this. But you heard Juliet. Everybody's doing the best they can. Shadow hunters fall in battle every day and homes are found for orphans. There is a system in place for shadow hunter children. The shadow hunters should be doing better than this. The law is meant to protect the most helpless among us. What is wrong with this institute?"
"As you're using your stern voice, I guess we're going to find out,"
Lily remarked, sounding chipper again. Alec was looking at Raphael with dismay so profound it felt almost like despair. He saw now that Raphael looked dirtier and less cared for than any other child in the crowd. Alec had learned the law at his mother's knee, at his father's, from his tutor, and every book in the library at the Institute back home. It had made sense to him when he was young, when very little made sense to him. The shadow hunter's sacred duty for all time, to stand unseen against the darkness, to defend at any cost. Now he was older, and he knew how complicated the world could be. It still hurt like an unexpected blow when he saw that shining ideal tarnished. If he were in charge of it all. But they didn't live in that world.
"Come with me for now," Alec told the Nephilim child. "I'll take care of you."
If Raphael really was alone, Alec could take him to the New York Institute, or to Alicante. He wasn't going to leave him here where he looked so friendless and neglected. He reached out, arms open, to pick Raphael up and carry him away.
Raphael bolted backward with the speed of a wild animal. He gave Alec a filthy look, as if he might bite if Alec tried that again.
Alec drew his arms back and lifted his hands in a gesture of surrender.
"All right," he said. "Sorry, but will you come with us? We want to hear your information. We want to help."
Lily translated. Raphael, still watching Alec warily, nodded. Alec rose and offered Raphael his hand. Raphael eyed the hand with disbelief, shaking his head and muttering something. Alec was almost sure it was that word again.
He looked Raphael over. The kid's clothes were stained and torn. He was much too thin, and he was barefoot. There were dark circles of exhaustion under his eyes. Alec didn't even know where they were going to sleep. Okay, he said at last. We have to buy him some shoes. He walked out of the throng of kids, with Lily at his side and Raphael orbiting them like a wary moon.
Maybe I can help you, Shadow Hunter, called out a fairy woman with dandelion hair from a stall.
Alec started forward, then stopped. Lily had caught his arm in a grip like iron.
Don't go near that woman, she whispered. I'll explain later.
Alec nodded and went on, despite the call of the fairy woman to come by. Juliet had been right. This market was a community, with huts and wagons surrounding the stalls. It was the biggest market Alec had ever seen. Alec found a fairy cobbler who seemed nice enough, though even the smallest pair of boots he had were too big. Alec took them anyway. He asked the cobbler, who spoke English, if anyone was taking care of Raphael. Surely, no matter what the kid said, someone must care. After a moment, the cobbler shook his head.
When the werewolf woman who looked after the orphans vanished, the other kids were given homes by my people. But, no offense meant, fairies won't take in a shadow hunter.
Not with the cold peace breeding hatred between shadow hunters and fairies. The laws were all wrong and children were paying the price.
Also, that child hates everybody, said the fairy cobbler. Watch out, he bites.
They were almost at the wire tunnel leading to the exit of the shadow market now. This far out from the center of the market, there were fallen walls, more signs of a place crushed by war and then left to decay. Hey, Alec told Raphael. Come here a second.
Mach der keine.
You're telling him not to worry in German, Lily reported gleefully. Alec sighed and knelt in the gray dust, among the rubble, gesturing Raphael to sit on a piece of the fallen wall. The child eyed Alec and the boots in his hand with an air of extreme mistrust. Then he plunked himself down and let Alec slip his feet into the two large boots. The kid's feet were small, his soles black with filth. Alec swallowed and drew the laces on Raphael's boots as tight as he could so they would stay on and Raphael could walk properly. Raphael stood as soon as Alec was done tying his laces. Alec stood as well. Come on, he said. Raphael's dark, measuring gaze was on Alec again. He stood perfectly still for a long moment. Then he lifted both his arms in a commanding gesture. Alec was so used to that gesture from Max that he moved without even thinking and scooped Raphael up in his arms. It was nothing like carrying Max, small and plump, always laughing and cuddling. Raphael was tall for his age and much too thin. Alec could feel the knobbly bones of his back. Raphael held himself very stiffly, as though he was undergoing an unpleasant ordeal. It was like holding a small statue, if you felt desperately sorry for the statue and unsure what to do. Carrying you means the boots are pointless, murmured Alec. But that's all right. I'm glad you're coming with us. You're safe now. I have you.
No te entiendo,
said Raphael's small, clear voice in his ear. Then, after a thoughtful pause,
Boludo.
Alec was sure of two things. That word was not a nice word, and this kid didn't like Alec at all. Jem and Tessa were standing at the gates of the shadow market when they saw him. They'd hoped to catch Alec and Lily before they reached the Buenos Aires Institute. Finding no sign of them, they'd worried Breakspear had detained them, but a warlock acquaintance of Tessa's had sent word a shadow hunter had been let into the market. Now they were worried the queen of the market had detained them. Jem was conferring with Tessa when the gates opened. Against barbed wire and starlight, they saw a tall man, his black head bowed and his tender blue eyes fixed on the child in his arms.
Will, thought Jem,
and grasped Tessa's hand tight. Whatever he felt, it was worse for her. Alec looked up and said, sounding relieved, Tessa.
What a handsome end to a long night, Lily said delightedly. If it isn't the former brother, Snackariah. Lily!
Alec exclaimed. But Tessa, still holding Jem's hand, gave Jem a highly amused look and smiled her gradual, beautiful smile.
It's Raphael's Lily, she said. How nice to see you. Forgive me, I feel like I know you better than I do. He talked about you often.
Lily's grin fractured as if someone had dropped a mirror.
What did he say about me? She asked in a small voice.
He said you were more efficient and intelligent than most of the clan, who were morons.
It sounded very cold to Jem, but that had been Raphael's way.
Lily's smile returned, warm as a flame held between cupped hands. It reminded Jem of the way she had looked when they first met. He had not known then that Tessa had sent Raphael to him for help. He had done his best then, and now Lily was a friend.
Thank you both for coming to help us, said Jem. Who is the child?
Alec explained the events of the night, being turned away from the Buenos Aires Institute, learning of the disappearances, and the discovery of Raphael, the child the Institute had abandoned.
I'm sorry you went to the Institute at all, Jem said. We should have warned you. But I haven't been a shadow hunter in a long time. I didn't realize that your first instinct would be to go there.
Our lodging house has rooms available, and at least one of them is windowless.
Come with us.
Alec carried the child with the ease of long habit. One hand remained free to grab a weapon, and he walked easily through the streets with the small precious weight. Jem, long out of practice, wouldn't have been able to do it himself. He had held Tessa's children, James and Lucy, when they were little, but that had been more than a century ago. Not many people wanted a silent brother near their child, unless that child was near death. They walked through the streets, past houses painted in flamboyant hues, flames scarlet, sea blue, crocodile green, the streets lined with jacaranda and olive trees. At last they reached their lodgings, the low whitewashed building turned blue by the first signs of dawn. Jem pushed open the circular red door and requested more rooms from their landlady, one without a window. Jem and Tessa had already secured the use of the little courtyard at the center of the lodging house, a group of small stone pillars open to the sky, circled with the soft violet blue of bougainvillea. They gathered there, Alec placing Raphael carefully down on the stone bench beside him. Raphael scooted to the other edge of the bench. He hung his head and was silent when Tessa spoke to him softly in Spanish, asking him for any information about the missing women. Jem hadn't heard about them before, but now that he knew, it was clear they had to help. Rosemary Herondale might be in danger, but so were these werewolf women. Jem wanted to do whatever he could for them. Returning to speech had been strange for Jem, but Tessa had learned many languages and taught him everything she could. Jem tried asking Raphael too, but Raphael shook his head sullenly. Lily was sitting cross-legged on the ground, one elbow propped on Alec's knee, to be near the child. She tilted her head toward Raphael and asked him if he would please get on with it, because the sun was rising and she'd have to go to bed soon. Raphael reached out and patted the bright pink streak in Lily's hair. Bonita, he said, face still solemn. The poor child didn't smile much, Jem thought. Of course, nor did Alec, who was looking miserable and determined about the missing women. Lily, who smiled very easily, did so now.
Aw, cute baby, she said in Spanish.
Do you want to call me Aunt Lily?
Raphael shook his head. Lily looked undaunted.
I have a trick, she offered, and snapped her fangs in Raphael's direction.
Raphael looked absolutely appalled.
What are you guys saying? Asked Alec worriedly. Why is he looking like that? Why did you do that?
Max loves it when I do that, said Lily and added in Spanish. I didn't mean to scare you.
Wasn't scared, Raphael responded in Spanish. That was stupid.
What did he say? Alec asked.
He said that was an awesome trick and he really enjoyed it, Lily reported.
Alec raised a skeptical eyebrow in her direction. Raphael pressed close to Alec. Tessa joined Lily on the ground. Tessa talked to Raphael gently, and Lily teased him, and together they got the full story, Lily translating for Alec as they went. Alec's face went more and more grim as he heard the story. Raphael knows he's a shadow hunter, and he's trying to learn. Raphael, who Jem thought understood a little more English than he was letting on, interrupted to correct Lily.
"Excuse me," Lily said. "He's trying to train. He spies on the other shadow hunters, so he knows what to do. He's small, and he makes sure they don't see him. While he was spying on them, he saw a shadow hunter creeping off down a lane. He met a warlock at the door of a big house. He got as close as he could, and he could hear women inside."
"Can you describe the shadow hunter you saw?" asked Alec, and Jem translated for him.
"I think you can do it," Jem added to the child encouragingly. "You see so much."
Raphael gave Jem a dark look, as though he disliked praise. He spent a few more moments in furious thought, kicking his two big boots over the edge of the stone bench, then reached into the pocket of his tattered trousers and placed a slim wallet in Alec's hands.
"Oh," Alec looked startled. "You stole this from the shadow hunter you saw?"
Raphael nodded.
"That's great. I mean," Alec paused.
"It's good that you're helping us, but it's very bad to steal wallets generally. Don't do it again."
"No te entiendo,"
Raphael announced firmly. He said that he didn't understand Alec, and his tone suggested he wasn't planning to understand Alec on this topic anytime soon.
"Don't say the other word," Alec said quickly.
"What other word?" Jem asked.
"Don't ask," said Alec and opened the wallet.
Shadow hunters did not carry mundane forms of identification like passports or ID cards, but they carried other things. Alec took out a weapons requisition document marked with the Breakspear family symbol.
"Clive Breakspear," Alec said slowly, "the head of the Institute. Juliet said these shadow hunters acted as mercenaries. What if this warlock must have hired them?"
"We have to find out what's happening," said Jem, "and stop it."
Alec set his jaw.
"Raphael can show us the house after he gets some rest. Tomorrow night we'll go back to the shadow market. We'll try to find the information you're looking for, and tell the queen of the market what, if anything, we've discovered."
Raphael nodded, then held his hand out for the wallet. Alec shook his head.
"What is this secret you want to know about?" Lily asked Jem.
"Lily, it's a secret," Alec said reprovingly. There were crickets chirping in an odd, beautiful melody beyond the walls.
"I trust you both," Jem said slowly. "You came here to help us. I trust this will go no further. I'm looking for someone who needs my help. There's a hidden line of shadow hunters I became aware of in the 1930s.
Lily shook her head.
"The 1930s were such a disappointment. Every year they insisted on not being the 1920s.
Will had died in the 1930s, and Tessa had been in agony.
Jem had not liked the 1930s much either.
His family has been hunted for decades," said Jem. "I don't know why. I learned how they split off from the Nephilim, but I still don't know why fairies are hunting them. I met one of them, but she refused my help and ran away. Since then, I have looked for them, and friends I trust have asked discreetly around the shadow market. The year I met you there, Lily, I was searching for Ragnar Fell, to find out what he could tell me. I want to know why they're being hunted, so that I can help them. Whoever their enemies are, they are mine too. Because the Carstairs owe the Herondales."
"I asked in the Spiral Labyrinth as well," said Tessa. "There was never any word, until suddenly we heard that someone was telling stories to the children of this market. Stories of love and revenge and misery. We heard a whisper of the name Herondale." She said the name that had once been hers very softly. Alec jumped as if someone had shouted it in his ear. Neither Jem nor Tessa mentioned Katerina Loss, who had carried the first lost Herondale child over the seas and raised him on strange shores. That wasn't their secret. Jem trusted Alec, but he was still a shadow hunter, and his father was the Inquisitor. Jem and Tessa were both well aware of the sentence the law would pass on Katerina for her act of love and mercy.
"I'll ask Juliet," said Alec. "I'll find out whatever I can. I won't go home until I've helped you."
"Thank you," Jem said. Now Raphael has to go to bed, said Alec.
We have a nice little room for you, Tessa told Raphael in Spanish, her voice soft and encouraging. Raphael shook his head.
Do you not want to be alone? Tessa asked.
That's fine, too. You can sleep with me and Jem.
When Tessa reached out her hands, Raphael turned his face into Alec's bicep and screamed. Tessa drew back after the long, mutinous howl. Alec automatically put his arm around the child.
Lily's vulnerable during the day, Alec said. I'd rather stay with her.
Will you be all right in the windowless room, Raphael?
Lily translated, and Raphael nodded emphatically. Jem showed them the way. At the door, he caught Alec's arm before he could follow Lily and Raphael.
I appreciate this, said Jem. I truly do. Please don't tell Jace yet.
Jem still thought about Jace, that fierce, helpless child he'd met on a dark sea, and the young man burning with heavenly fire. He imagined 100 scenarios where he did better by Jace. If he had been the silent brother who cared for Jace after his father left him, if he had spent more time with Jace, if Jace had been just slightly older, the age Will had been when Jem first met him. Maybe Jem would have known. But what could he have done for Jace, even if he had known?
I don't want Jace to think he has family somewhere he won't get to know, said Jem.
Blood is not love, but it offers a chance for love. He never had the chance to know Celine Montclair or Stephen Herondale.
I don't want him to feel he is missing another chance.
Jace was happy in New York, though Jem had not helped him be so. He had his love and his parabatai and his institute. If Jem couldn't help him, at least he did not want to hurt him. Jem still thought about Celine Montclair, too. If he hadn't been a silent brother, with his heart turning to stone in his breast, perhaps he would have understood how much trouble she was in. Perhaps he could have found a way to help her. He didn't call Celine Jace's mother, because Jem had seen how Jace looked at Maris Lightwood. Maris was Jace's mother. Many years ago, when Jem was still a child, his uncle Elias came to the London Institute and offered to take him away.
After all, he said, we are family. You should go, Will said stormily. I don't care.
Will had slammed the door on his way out, declaring he was off on a wild adventure. After Elias departed, Jem had found Will sitting in the dark in the music room, staring at Jem's violin. He had sat down on the floor beside Will.
Entreat me not to leave thee, idiot, Jem had said, and Will had put his head down on Jem's shoulder.
Jem had felt Will trembling with the effort not to laugh or cry, and known Will wanted to do both. Blood was not love. But Jem didn't forget that Celine had never had the chance to be Jace's mother. Life was full of broken hearts and missed chances, but Jem could try to redress some of the wrong done Celine by the world. He could do his best for Jace. Alec was studying Jem intently.
I won't tell Jace, he said. Not yet.
Not if you tell him soon.
I hope I will, said Jem.
Can I ask you something? Said Alec abruptly. The Buenos Aires Institute is corrupted, and the cold peace is fraying our bonds with downworlders. You could do a lot of good if you were with us. Why did you stop being a shadow hunter?
I am with you, said Jem.
Do I have to be a shadow hunter to be that?
No, said Alec, but I don't understand why you don't want to be one anymore.
Don't you? Jem asked.
You have a parabatai. Once, so did I. Can you imagine fighting without him?
Alec was holding on to the doorframe, and as Jem watched, his knuckles went white.
I have Tessa, so I have more joy every day than some do in their whole lives. Far more than I deserve. I have seen the world with my wife by my side, and we have our tasks to make life meaningful. We all have different ways to serve. She has the secrets from the Spiral Labyrinth, and I those of the Silent Brothers, and we have combined our knowledge and saved lives that I believe couldn't have been saved by any other means. I do want to help, and I will,
but not as a shadow hunter. I will never be that again.
Alec looked at Jem, those blue eyes wide and sorrowful. He looked like Will, but he wasn't Will, any more than Jace was. None of them could ever be Will.
When you fight, you should fight with your whole heart, said Jem softly. I don't have the heart for life among the Nephilim, for that particular fight, not any longer. Too much of my heart is in a grave.
I'm sorry, Alec said awkwardly. I do understand.
There's nothing to be sorry for, Jem told him.
He went back to his room where Tessa was waiting, a book open on her lap. She looked up when he came in and she smiled. There was no smile like hers in the world.
Everything all right?
She asked. He looked down at her and said, Yes. Tessa shut her book and reached up to him. She was kneeling on the bed and he was standing beside it, and the world was filled with mischances and heartbreak. But then there was Tessa. Tessa kissed him, and he felt her grin against his mouth.
Brother Snackariah, she murmured. Come here.
The room might be windowless, but there was a brown jar crowded with red flowers on the table, and two white single beds. Lily had tossed her leather jacket onto the bed closest to the wall. Raphael was sitting on the other bed, turning over a metallic object thoughtfully in his hands. Alec suddenly understood why he had agreed to be carried.
What's that you have there, sweetie? Lily asked as Alec came in.
What he has is my phone, said Alec, which he stole.
In Raphael's hands, Alec's phone buzzed. Alec reached for it, but Raphael moved casually out of reach. He didn't seem terribly concerned that Alec had grabbed for him. He was staring at the phone. Alec reached for the phone, then stopped, caught off guard. As Raphael studied the phone, the sullen line of his mouth twitched, then slowly curved into a smile. That smile, slow and warm and sweet, altered his whole face. Alec's hand dropped. Raphael turned a suddenly bright countenance up to him and chirped a question. Even his voice sounded different when he was happy.
I don't understand you, Alec said helplessly.
Raphael waved the phone in Alec's face to illustrate his point. Alec looked at the screen and kept looking. He had had a sick, unsteady feeling in his chest since he realized what the Shadow Hunters might be doing here. But the world felt steady again now. Magnus had sent a photo with the caption, Bluebird and I home from a wild and dangerous mission with a swing set. Magnus was leaning against their front door. Max was laughing, all dimples, the way he did whenever Magnus did magic to amuse him. There were blue and golden lights streaming all around them, and huge iridescent bubbles that seemed made of light, too. Magnus was smiling a small fawn smile, and the black spikes of his hair wreathed with radiant ribbons of magic. Alec had asked Magnus to send him pictures whenever he was away, after their first mission when Max was a baby, to remind Alec of what he was fighting for. Lily cleared her throat.
The kid asked, Who is that cool man?
Oh, said Alec, kneeling by the bed.
Oh, that's Magnus.
His name is Magnus Bane. He and I are going to get married. One day they would. Alec wasn't sure why it felt important to tell this child. Lily translated. Raphael looked from the phone to Alec's face, then back again. His brow furrowed in clear surprise. Alec waited. He had heard kids say terrible things before now. Adults poured poison in their minds, and then it came out of their mouths. Lily laughed.
He said, Lily reported with unholy joy, What is that cool man doing with you?
Alec said, Raphael, give me my phone back.
Let him have it for a bit before he goes to sleep, said Lily, who was one of the reasons Max was spoiled.
Alec glanced over and found Lily wearing an unusually serious look.
Come here a minute, said Lily. I promised to tell you why I didn't want you to go near that fairy woman at the Shadow Market.
I have a story I want you to hear that I think might help Jem. I don't want to tell anybody but you.
Alec let Raphael keep the phone. In return, Raphael let Alec tuck him into bed. Alec took the chair by the door and placed it by Lily's bed. They waited until Raphael's eyes fell shut, with Alec's phone on the pillow beside him. Lily studied the striped pillow on her bed as if it were fascinating. "Are you hungry?" Alec asked at last. "If you need blood, you can take mine." Lily glanced up, her face startled.
"No, I don't want that."
"You're not for that." Alec tried not to show how relieved he was. Lily looked back at the pillow and squared her shoulders.
"Remember when you asked me if I was a jazz baby and I said to call me the jazz baby?"
"I'm still not going to do that."
"I still think you should," Lily argued, "but that's not what I meant. The 1920s were my favorite decade, but I may have been misleading you about my age," she grinned. "It's a lady's prerogative."
"Okay," said Alec, not sure where this was going.
"So, how old are you then?"
"I was born in 1885, said Lily. "I think. My mother was a Japanese peasant girl, and she was sold to my father, a rich Chinese merchant."
"Sold?" said Alec. "That's not..."
"It wasn't legal," Lily said in a tight voice. "But it happened. They lived together for a few years in Hong Kong where he worked. I was born there. My mother thought my father would take us back home with him. She taught me to speak the way he would want and dress the way he would want, like a Chinese lady. She loved him. He got tired of her. He left, and before he left, he sold us off. I grew up in a place called the House of Eternal Pearl." She looked up from the pillow. "I don't have to tell you, do I?" she asked. "What kind of place it was? Where women were sold and men came and went?"
"Lily," Alec breathed in horror.
Lily shook her black and pink head defiantly.
"They called it the House of Eternal Pearl because some men want women to be young and beautiful forever. Pearls are created from a center of dirt that can't be washed away. In the cellar without windows, in the heart of that house, were chained women. Those women were cold and lovely forever. They would never age and would do anything for blood. They were for the richest men. They fetched the highest prices, and they had to be fed. My mother grew too old, so they fed her to the vampires. And that night, I crept down and I made a deal with one of them. I promised if she turned me, I'd free us all. She kept her side of the bargain, but I didn't keep mine." Lily studied the toes of her pointed boots. "I woke up and killed a lot of people. I don't mean that I drank from somebody, though I did that too. I burned the place to the ground. Nobody got out. Not the men, not the women. Nobody but me. I didn't care about anybody but myself." Alec moved his chair closer to her, but Lily drew her legs up on the bed, making herself as small as possible. "Nobody knows all that," she said. "A few people know a little. Magnus knows I wasn't made in the 1920s, but he could tell that I didn't want to say. He never asked for any of my secrets."
"No," said Alec. "He wouldn't."
Magnus knew all about painful secrets, Alec had learned. "Raphael bribed somebody to find out," said Lily. "I don't know who or how much he paid. He could have asked me, but he wasn't like that. I only knew that he knew because he was sweet to me for a few nights, in his way. We never talked about it. I never told anybody. Not until you." "I won't tell anybody," Alec promised. The corner of Lily's mouth lifted.
"I know you won't, Alec."
Some of the tension went out of her thin shoulders. "I told you so you'd understand what happened next," she said.
"I couldn't stay in Hong Kong. I came to London, I think it was 1903,
and I met Shadow Hunters for the first time."
"Shadow Hunters," said Alec. He understood why Downworlder said the word that way sometimes. Already he couldn't bear what had happened to Lily. He didn't want to hear about Shadowhunters doing anything worse to his friend. But Lily was smiling now, just a little. A group of young Shadowhunters. I crossed paths with them at a Downworlder salon. I noticed one in particular, a girl with hair the color of blood in shadows. I barely knew what Shadowhunters were, but she was brave and kind. She protected people. Her name was Cordelia Carstairs. I asked around about the Shadowhunters. It was there I heard about a fairy woman with a spite against all Shadowhunters, particularly against one family. We saw her at the Shadow Market tonight. Tell Jem to ask the woman with dandelion hair about the Herondales. She knows something. Lily fell silent. Alec knew he had to say something, but he didn't know how. Thanks, Lily, he said at last. Not for the information. Thanks for telling me. Lily smiled, as though she didn't think what Alec had said was too dumb. After London, I traveled on and met Camille Belcourt in Russia. Camille was fun. She was bright and heartless and hard to hurt. I wanted to be like her. When Camille traveled to New York and became head of the vampire clan there, I went with her. Lily bowed her head. After a long moment sunk in memory, she looked up. Want to know something dumb? When Camille and I reached New York after the Great War, she said brightly, I looked around for Shadowhunters. Wasn't that stupid? Most Shadowhunters are not like you, or Jem, or Cordelia. I encountered Nephilim who made it very clear the angelic warriors were not sent to shield a creature like me. I didn't care about anybody, and nobody cared about me. And that was how it was, for decades and decades. It was really fun. Was it? Alec asked. He kept his voice noncommittal. She sounded so brittle. The '20s in New York were the brightest time for both of us, when the whole world seemed as frenzied as we were. Decades later, Camille was still trying to replicate them, and so was I. But even I thought Camille went too far sometimes. There was an emptiness in her she was always trying to fill. She'd permit her vampires to do anything. Once, in the 1950s, she let a very old vampire called Louis Karnstein stay at the hotel. He preyed on children. I thought he was disgusting. But I didn't care much. I was very good at not caring by then. Lily shrugged and laughed. The sound was not convincing. Maybe I'd hoped the Shadowhunters would come, but they didn't. Someone else came instead. A pack of scruffy, mundane boys who wanted to defend their streets from the monster. They all died, except one. He always did what he set out to do. He killed the monster. He was my Raphael. Lily stroked the leather jacket where it lay in a heap on her bed. Before he killed the monster, Raphael was made into a vampire himself. Your Magnus came to Raphael's aid, but I didn't. Raphael could have died then, and I would never have even known. I met Raphael later. He came upon a bunch of us feeding in an alley and gave us a terrible lecture. He was so solemn I thought he was funny. I didn't take him seriously at all. But when he came to live at the hotel, I was pleased. Because, hey, it seemed like more fun. Who doesn't want more fun? There was nothing else in the world. Magnus had told Alec the story, though Magnus had never painted himself as anyone's savior. It was strange to hear it from Lily, and stranger to hear, knowing how the story ended. Raphael asked for better security at the hotel on his second day of living there. He argued that a pack of mundane kids had been able to break in and kill one of our own. Camille laughed at him. Then we were attacked by a rogue band of werewolves, and Raphael's security measures were put in place. Guards were posted, and Raphael always took his turn guarding the hotel. Even once he was second in command and didn't have to. He took the first watch on the first night. I remember him showing me plans of the hotel's every weak point, the ways he'd figured out how to best defend ourselves,
He had it all worked out, though he'd been with us less than a week. He left to take up his post, and as he went, he said, "Sleep, Lily. I'll watch the doors." I never slept peacefully before that night. I didn't know how to rest and trust I was safe. I slept that day as I had never slept before. Lily stared at the vase of flowers, bright red as vampire blood. Alec didn't think she was seeing them. Later, it turned out that Raphael hired the werewolves to attack us so we would implement the safety precautions he wanted. Lily added in pragmatic tones. He was extremely set on having his own way. Also, he was a total asshat. "That is clear to me," said Alec. Lily laughed again. She got up from the bed, gripping Alec's shoulder for a moment as she passed. Then she began to pace the little room as if it were a cage. Raphael was always there from then on. Camille would demote him from being second in command now and then to annoy him. It didn't matter. He never wavered, no matter what anyone else did. I thought he'd be there forever. Then he was taken. I told myself I had to hold it together, form an alliance with the werewolves, hold the line against madness. Just until Raphael came back. Only Raphael never came back. Lily drew a hand over her eyes. She went to Raphael's bedside, passing her tear-stained hand lightly over his curly hair. "Well," she said, "I was happy for 54 years. That's more than most people get. Now there's the clan to look after, like Raphael would have wanted. The night we knew he was gone, and every night since, I watch my vampires in the home he guarded. I watch the mundanes in the streets he loved. Every one of them looks like a child I should help, a possibility for a future I wasn't able to imagine. Every one of them seems precious, worth defending, worth the world. Every one of them is Raphael." The child stirred, as if he were being called. Lily pulled her hand away. It was day, after a long night. Alec rose and guided her, a hand on her trembling shoulder, to the bed. He pulled a sheet over her as if she were Raphael. Then he positioned the chair between Lily and Raphael and the entrance, and took his place there. "Sleep, Lily," Alec said gently. "I'll watch the doors." Alec didn't rest well. His mind was churning with thoughts of Lily's story. The Buenos Aires Institute's corruption, lost Herondales and werewolves, and Jem and Tessa's quest. He was used to waking up in dark silk sheets and strong arms. He missed home. Raphael slept in, not stirring until afternoon. Alec suspected that the orphans of the Shadow Market had all developed nocturnal tendencies. When Raphael woke, Alec took him out to the courtyard, where he sat on the stone bench moodily eating an energy bar. Alec thought he was sulking because Alec had taken back his phone. "Has anyone ever given you a nickname?" he asked Raphael. "Do people ever call you Rafe?" Raphael gave him a blank look. Alec worried he hadn't conveyed his meaning. "Rafa," Raphael said finally. He finished one energy bar and held his hand out for another. Alec gave it to him. "Rafa," Alec tried. "Do you want me to call you that? Are you getting any of this? I'm sorry, I can't speak Spanish." Raphael made a face as if to say what he thought of being called Rafa. "Okay," said Alec. "I won't call you that. Just Raphael then?" The boy gave Alec a massively unimpressed look. "Here this fool goes again," his heir suggested. "Talking to me when I cannot understand him." Jem and Tessa joined them in the courtyard, ready for Raphael to lead them to the house he'd seen. "I'll stay and guard Lily," said Tessa, reading Alec's mind. "Don't worry about her. I have wards up, and even if somebody came, I've got it covered." She made a tiny gesture. Gray, glowing magic, like the shine of light on river water or the sheen of pearls in shadow, twined about her fingers. Alec smiled his gratitude at Tessa. Until he was sure about what was happening with this warlock and these shadow hunters,
He didn't want anybody undefended.
Don't you worry about me either, Tessa told Jem, settling her magic bright fingers into his black and silver hair, drawing him for a goodbye kiss. I won't, Jem told her. I know my wife can take care of herself. My wife, Jem said, his voice sounding casual and delighted in that mutual possession, the bargain made between them in the sight of everyone they loved. Alec had heard a poem read at weddings. My true love has my heart and I have his. Never was a fairer bargain made. Love that was permanent in the eyes of all the world, demanding respect, blazoning the certain knowledge Alec had when he woke every morning. Nobody else for me until the day I die. Having everyone else know that. Jem and Tessa had that, as Helen and Aline had it. But a shadow hunter couldn't marry a downworlder in gold. A shadow hunter was forbidden to wear the wedding rune for a downworlder, and he wouldn't insult Magnus with a ceremony the Nephilim saw as lesser. He and Magnus had agreed to wait until the law was changed. Alec couldn't help the tiny sting of jealousy. His phone buzzed in his pocket and Raphael perked up. Magnus had sent Alec a picture of Max sleeping, using Chairman Meow as his pillow. Raphael glared, obviously disappointed Magnus was not in the picture. Alec was slightly disappointed about that himself. The afternoon was hot, the streets mostly deserted. The house where the warlock lived was down several winding streets, some cobbled and some dirt. Most of the houses on the curving roads were small, painted bright yellow, or brick red and snowy white. But the warlock's house that Raphael pointed out was a huge gray building on the end of a street. A figure was approaching the door. A shadow hunter. Alec and Jem exchanged a grim look. Alec recognized him as one of Breakspear's men from the Institute. He pulled Jem and Raphael into an alleyway. Stay with Jem a minute, he told Raphael and tossed a grappling hook to the roof of a neighboring house. Alec climbed up and made his way across the sloping terracotta tile until he was across from the gray building. There were bars on the windows, and the enchantments Magnus had put on his ring allowed him to sense wards with enormous accuracy. The place was heavily warded. Alec crouched down behind a chimney and swiftly drew runes for clarity and awareness on his arms. With increased ability, he could hear noises from behind those walls. There were a lot of people in that house. Shuffling feet, muffled conversation. Alec was able to pick out a few distinct words. Next delivery from Breakspear will be at midnight tonight. He heard another noise, much closer up, and twisted to see Raphael and Jem coming toward him across the roof. Jem offered a small, rueful smile. He slipped away from me and climbed a drainpipe. Jem was hovering at Raphael's back, obviously nervous about touching him. Alec saw how Raphael had managed to slip away. Can you sense those wards? Alec asked, and Jem nodded. Alec knew Tessa had taught him ways to use and discern magic, even though Jem no longer had all the power of a silent brother or a shadow hunter. Can Tessa handle them? Tessa can handle anything, Jem said proudly. I said to stay down there with Jem, Alec told Raphael. Raphael gave him a look that was at once both uncomprehending and insulting, and then his big boot slipped on the ridge terracotta tiles. Jem caught him before he hit the tile and set him upright. If Raphael kept walking like this, he was going to skin his knees. You have to walk differently on roofs, Alec told him. He took Raphael's hands in his, showing him how. Like this, because they slope. Do it like me. It was oddly nice to teach a child these things. He'd had all sorts of plans to teach his little brother when he got older, but his baby brother hadn't lived to be older. When will you give your parents a real grandchild? He'd heard Irina Cartwright ask Isabel after a clave meeting. By the angel, said Isabel. Is Max imaginary? Irina paused, then laughed. A shadow hunter child to teach our ways. Nobody would give those people a shadow hunter child.
Imagine a warlock around one of our little ones. And that kind of behavior.